Blog Talk Radio.
Man resides in the brightly lit realm he assumes to be reality. But there is, unperceived by most, a netherworld. A place just as real, but not so clearly lit. An eerie side.
It's like intro number 67, I think. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale K from Spook Show, accompanied by...
I'm scared already. Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and from Spaceship One. And a great intro that was, Dale. It was from one of your promos.
I'm rehashing those a little
for the
bit.
Webpage.
Adapting them from here.
fun little piece there. And a nice video to go with it. You're sharing it on the Eerie House Facebook page, are you not?
No, I just put that in our little chat there for now, but that was...
You need to share that in the Facebook page so they can go visit that wonderful little opening that you have there. It's pretty cool.
Sure, why not?
Yeah!
We can do it!
But the Masters continues, and we continue on for our next 600 shows here with tonight. Two more holes to hit. So then we got X minus one. Have you heard this one, Dale? I know you've heard a lot of the X minus ones.
I don't believe I have. This one might be and one then, I have not heard yet.
And then a theater five. And so lots of fun stuff.
See, Fox, they knows that intro. He knows the one I made. He remembers it.
Yeah,
because I made three of them for Eerie House Television, which I would love to bring back someday. Mm-hmm. One was a spoof on Twilight Zone, which you heard yesterday, the Eerie Zone. Tonight's was Tales from the Dark Side, which is kind of a spoof. And the other one was an Outer Limits one, but I can't really use it here because it's really more appropriate for visuals and horror hosts and things like that there. But tonight, it's radio, and lots of it.
And lots of it. Yes, we got a full two programs, and it's so much fun sharing these shows and theming them up. You know, I didn't think when I first thought to try and match up the Masters, which is one of the biggest golf tournaments of the year, to radio, and yet look at all that we found, so...
Yeah.
Some wonderful murders yesterday, and tonight we have, no murders, but we have some special things going on.
No murders? I'm depressed. I am so depressed.
Well, but one's a bit of a sci-fi issue, and the other is, I don't want to say it because it'll give it away. I'm not doing that. So
he ain't
the other
doing
is
it,
a
folks.
Bit out of the... The other is a bit out of the norm. I'll put it that way.
Ooh.
So, yep.
And we might even get a visit from Ugg tonight, no?
I think that I have done a lot of research that I made up, and will have another visit with Ugg, the caveman, the world's greatest inventor of all time.
Or at least the first. The earliest known inventor is Ugg.
Well, you know, he invented so many things. He just never gets credit for it. That's the problem. He never gets credit for the stuff he invents. And the same thing happens again today. But the research that I made up proves, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that he is indeed the inventor.
Bless Ugg. Where would we be without him?
He never gave up. Never gave up.
No.
So, But we'll have a visit with Ugg there in between our two shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of fun tonight.
And you, at one point, I mean, I've been on like a 3-par course and been on the driving range, but that's as far as it's been for me. So, have you ever got the infamous hole in one, Dale?
No. That's because I never made that sound. Yeah, if I had made
that sound,
I probably would have gotten a hole in one at some point. I came very close.
You probably
would have. Like maybe 2 to 3 feet of one on a par three. I used to be very. My best club was a 5-iron. You know what I mean? It was one that I could get some loft, get it up in the air, but yet it would get some distance and take a run and roll. Oh, well, yeah, it was one of those where you're on an elevated tee and you're looking down. So I skied it, and it landed near the hole and started drawing towards it, and I held my breath, but and it looked a lot closer up on the tee. It was actually a good 2 or 3 feet away.
See, should have tried this too.
Yeah, I think I was so giddy, if I'm not mistaken, I missed and then got a par.
Oh, no.
So, that's terrible to get that close. And then, but it's okay. It's fun. You get to be outside. It's like I said, it's very aerobic. You walk, you swing your arms a bit, and it's
yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not going to kill yourself, but it's good exercise.
I've used my golf clubs more on the sketches for the TV show than I have for anything else.
I used them more as a weed whacker of late.
Billy.
No.
Okay.
That was not Dr. Smith. Terrible.
No.
That was not Jonathan Harris, I promise.
Wow. Okay.
Get that ugly picture out of our heads and move on to some radio. Where do you want to start today, Dave?
I don't know. You want to start with, they're both good stories. Theater 5, I think, has a wonderful ending. Why don't we start off with the X-1?
We could do that.
It's an interesting tale. It was episode number 85, and the original broadcast date was January 23rd of 1957.
The kick started.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4.
More hamsters.
3,
more hamsters.
2. X minus 1. Fire.
Far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, the time is 1965, the place, a golf course. The story, open warfare.
You
wouldn't believe it, but there are some people that think that Caddy is a pet name for a big car. No, I mean it. Over those little wagons you pull around the course or carrying their own clubs, there are people actually playing golf for years, never seen a caddy. As far as I'm concerned, you take the human element out of golf or any sport, and what do you got left? Nothing. I mean, you could say I'm prejudiced on account of my being a caddy, but that's the way I feel about it. Besides which, a caddy is a perfect observer of the passing parade of human experience. I'll give you for instance. Now, you take Jim Pearson. He won the U.S. Open in 1960, 61, and 64. Well, let me tell you about Jim Pearson. He was the pro at the club here, and I remember when it all started. He was out playing with Mr. Hatcher. That's Sam Hatcher. He couldn't break 90 if the ball had wings. And in the locker room, he looked like a sack of flour that had been set down hard. But he was loaded with money. Anyway, they were waiting for a foursome of dames who, shouldn't have been wearing slacks. When Hatcher turned to Jim, and with a real sweet smile, he lowered the boom.
Jim, you're a good golfer.
Thank you, Mr. Hatcher.
You're a good golfer, even if you can't teach me anything.
Oh, you're coming along fine, Mr. Hatcher.
We've been good to you at the country club, haven't we?
Oh, yes.
I want you to do something for me.
Yes, sir?
Stay away from my daughter.
Oh, well, Mr. Hatcher...
I won't have Alice marrying a man who has nothing but coordination and muscles.
What?
When I was only your age, I was making $50,000 a year. It takes brains to do that. Brains get more valuable. Muscles deteriorate. There's nothing muscles can do that a machine can't do better.
You don't think I could make $50,000?
I know you can't. You haven't got the guts.
Now, listen, Mr. Hatcher.
I'm just quoting history, Jim. Take the tournament in St. Louis. You blew up. And the Goodall and the Palm Beach. You could have won all those. But you blew. You chickened out.
That's not exactly fair, Mr. Hatcher.
But it's true.
I can make $50,000.
Yes, in your whole life.
Oh, no. No, in 1 year.
Oh, you can?
Yes, sir.
All right, Jim, you're a sportsman. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you can make $50,000 in 1 year at this infantile pastime that you call golf, you can have Alice.
Why, that's the most arrogant...
What's the matter, Jim? Don't you think you can do it?
I know I can do it.
All right, then. Is it a bet?
All right. All right, it's a bet.
Very well, then. I believe the ladies are finished. Shall we drive?
Naturally, old man Hatcher set a trap for him. And I guess it worked pretty good, too. Jim knew I heard the whole thing, so he used to talk it over with me. Hey, you've been doing real good this season, Mr. Pearson.
Sure. Been away on the whole circuit. I haven't seen Alice more than one day at a time in the last 6 months.
You hear from Miss Hatcher?
Oh, yes. Yes, I got a telegram right after I won the first tournament. It said, and I quote, "I won't be bought and sold." Signed, Alice.
She found out about that bet, huh?
Yeah, I'm sure her father made sure she did.
Wouldn't that frost you?
It did, it did. It cost me $5,000 in tournament money, and then I just got mad. You know, the cold mad, the kind of mad that puts 20 yards on your drive?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes when I get sore at the caddy master, I go out to the driving range. Bango! Every time you hit it, you got it right between his eyes.
Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah. Every time I slam a ball down the fairway, I feel as if I've just belted Hatcher right behind the ear.
You still figure you got a chance?
Oh, I'm going to get that $50,000 this year, all right. I'm going to win the U.S. Open, and that's worth $25,000 in cash plus vaudeville appearances or Ed Sullivan's television show or something. And I'm going to take the money, and I'm going to lay it in front of Alice, and I'm going to say, I wasn't buying you. I was buying the right to tell you I love you.
Ah, gee, that's pretty.
All right, never mind. Give me a number 7 iron.
Jim Pearson sure was burning up the circuit. He came into the U.S. Open the man to watch. The day the tournament opened, Jimmy Cannon had in his column, "You are Jim Pearson, the hard luck boy with the velvet swing." It was real philosophical. All the sports writers picked him to win. And then Saul showed up. We was on a practice tee. Jim had been sharpening up his number one wood when all of a sudden the gallery took off like a batch of big birds. They were around another tee about 100 feet away. Jim knocked off, and the two of us strolled over.
Hey, that's some swing. Oh. Who is that, Pete?
I never seen him before. His name's Saul.
That's some swing. Yeah, he's no amateur. I've never seen him on the pro circuit.
Hey, Mr. Pearson, look at the caddy.
280 yards down there.
That ain't what I mean. Look, he's got a ball bag in his hands. Now watch.
Oh, that's a good catch. He caught that ball right in the bag.
Mr. Pearson, that caddy didn't move that sack. That ball dropped right in 280 yards away.
Oh, it's an accident.
Yeah, look, it happened again.
He's a trick shot artist. Wait till he gets into competition.
I don't know. He just hit another one dead center.
Oh, there isn't anybody that good. Not even old Joe Kirkwood.
Quite a spectacle, eh, Jim?
Oh, hello, Hatcher.
Must be unnerving to watch something like that.
I can stand it.
But will you be able to stand it when the going gets rough? Will you blow up like you always do? It'll be too bad just when you're so close.
Don't worry about me.
I'm not. I imagine Saul will take care of that.
Oh, you know him?
I brought him here. My own personal entry. He's going to beat you out of the open. But he's got something to learn. Look at him. Just a dumb country boy who never saw a golf club till a few months ago. I think he might teach you something, Jim.
Oh, I could tell Jim was going to have a good day the minute he took his driver out of the bag. He took his practice swings and they went around clean, grooved, and loose. I would have bet my shirt on him. As a matter of fact, I did. The crowd was sympathetic. They wanted to see him burn up the course.
Well, Pete, we all ready?
Yeah.
What's this? New kind of golf ball?
Oh, yeah. A young fella from the A.B. Wells Sporting Goods Company. He slipped me a fin to talk into using these balls.
Well, I don't know. Any good?
Yeah, I figured. They're guaranteed they had 20 yards to every drive.
Well, I sure could use 20 yards.
Well, he's going to come around to see you later. He wanted to sign you up for testimonials and advertising and things. You know, the golf ball used by Jim Pearson when he won the U.S. Open. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of dough in it.
Well, we'll give it a try. Let's tee up.
Oh, he started off real good. A long, straight drive right down the fairway. It was a birdie four. Jim was clicking him off that day.
There you are, Pete. 34 and a 32 for 66 on the 18. Six birdies, 12 pars.
Yeah, three more rounds like that should win easy. Hey, how are the new golf balls?
Huh? Oh, fine. You know, they aren't kidding. It does average out about 20 yards longer on the drive. I'll have to get a couple more dozen.
We went around and watched Jim's score being posted on the big board. Most of the field was still out, but he was ahead of the closest competitor by three strokes.
Who's that?
Oh, somebody coming down the 18th. It must be a hot round. Yeah, I'll be posting it in a minute.
Saul.
Hmm?
Yeah, you see, there he is walking through the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here comes the secretary with a score.
Hey, Mr. Pearson, look at it. 32 and 32, 64. 64, that's a new course record.
Yeah, well, it's only the first round.
New course record, look at that. Threes and fours. He ain't over four for the whole day.
What's the matter, Jim? You don't look well.
One round is not a tournament.
Well, comfort yourself while you can. Saul's just getting warmed up. He's that mythical thing, the perfect golfer. But he's dumb. No brains, Jim. No brains at all.
Naturally, in the sports broadcasts and the newspapers, Jim could have been playing on a miniature golf course at Asbury Park, New Jersey. The big news was Saul. They all called him Silent Saul. The odds the boys in the shower room played around with on Pearson took a dive, and you couldn't get even money for Saul. The next morning, Jim's gallery was pretty small. When he stepped up to the ball, it was a smattering of applause like a matinee just before they closed the show. But his drive was as straight as the day before and longer by about 20 yards on the average. Hey, that's a nice putt, Mr. Pearson.
Yeah. Who's that?
That's Saul, I'm afraid. He's coming around behind you.
Well, he's going to have a big fight.
Jim's second nine was a duplicate of the day before. Another 32. He equaled Saul's record-tying score of yesterday. Then when we came in to read it on the big board, he looked like somebody hit him on the head with a driver.
Look at that, Pete. 31 out, 31 back for a 62. He's got me by two strokes today.
And four strokes in all. What do you got to say, Jim?
Well, nothing, Mr. Hatcher.
looks like this cat's an alien or a robot or something.
Or something. Yeah, during the show here, I picked up a few quotes on golfing, Dale. We might enjoy some of these. Let's see. Lee Trevino said, "My swing is so bad, I look like a caveman killing his lunch." Gerald Ford, "I'm knowing getting better at golf because I'm hitting fewer spectators." Here is your man, Paul Harvey. "Golf is a game in which you yell 4, shoot 6, and write down 5. Hank Aaron, "It took me 17 years to get 3,000 hits in baseball. Took me one afternoon on the golf course." Let's see. We got Winston Churchill there. Let me see. Yeah, I guess we'll go to Winston. I thought I
How about Bing Crosby? That was a great game of golf, fellas.
Is that what it was? Oh,
yes.
There's.
That was his last words.
Have,
that was Bing Crosby's last words.
Oh, that was his last words. Yeah, he right there on the golf course he went, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I think his last words were, "That was a great game of golf, fellas."
Wow. Winston Churchill, "Golf is a game whose aim is to hit a very small ball into an ever smaller hole with weapons singularly ill-designed for the purpose." And we'll finish our quotes with Dean Martin, "If you drink, don't drive, don't even putt." There you go.
There you go. And then there's always Ted Knight. Or Jonathan Harris, we're not sure which, but I digress.
No. It's Ted Knight.
I feel unclean. I feel so unclean.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, because I'm me. We got more old-time radio. Ugh, coming up. Don't go anywhere. Let's wrap up. Open Warfare.
Throw me the soap, would you, Pete?
Yeah, sure, Mr. Pearson. Yeah.
Thanks. You know, there's something wrong, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't happen this way.
It's tough luck, Mr. Pearson.
Oh, no, it's not that. People don't just pop out of nowhere and break all records at the Open. Men don't take up golf and become perfect golfers in a month. He's got to have some weakness.
Well, if he has, he ain't shown it yet.
Well, I've got to find it.
Jim was out the next morning, and he came in with a classy 32. On the back nine, he slipped a stroke to 33. He was still 4 down. He shook off a couple of reporters who were trying to egg him into a feud with this Saul, and the two of us just hung around in the crowd watching Silent Saul. His first drive went a clean 300 yards down the fairway, straight as a ruler.
Pete, there's something about his swing. There's something about it. I've seen it before.
Oh, you never saw that Silent Saul before, Mr. Pearson.
Still, there's something about his swing.
On a follow-up shot, Saul had about 240 to go. He took a club from his bag and took a few wiggling gestures, set his driver behind the ball, and swung.
Pete?
Hmm?
Did you see that swing? Those wiggles?
Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of guys do that.
Yeah, but it's unnecessary. I mean, you don't have to make those wiggles before you address the ball.
Yeah, sure, and you don't have to spit 3 times every time you got a tough putt, but you do.
But there's still something strange about him. Everything about him is perfection except those wiggles. And he doesn't talk. Look at him putting.
Hmm?
Just look at him.
Mm-hmm.
That could be Todd Winters, couldn't it?
Yeah, he does look something like Winters.
Yeah, when he puts. But that iron shot, who wiggles like that? Who does those wiggles? George Potter.
Yeah, I guess he does.
Yeah, and the approach shot, Pete. That's Gordon Brown. Nobody else bends the knee that way.
He really gave it a lot of study, huh?
And the drive. That grooved swing on the drive. Pete, come on. I've watched enough.
Ah, Pearson, a 63, I see. You're 6 strokes behind with 1 round to go. You want to give up now?
I don't think I will. I think we'd better talk about it privately.
Oh, that won't be necessary.
Well, it doesn't matter to me, but I know that Saul is a robot.
So you think he's a robot?
Isn't he?
Of course he is. How does it feel to be beaten at your own game by a mindless machine?
Oh, you haven't won yet. A golf ball takes some funny bounces.
How did you find out about Saul?
Oh, Saul is a lot of things, but none of them is Saul. He's Todd Winters, George Potter, Gordon Brown, and his drive, that's me. You copied it after me. Take us away and there's nothing left. Tell me, how'd you do it?
Money can do anything. All it needs is a purpose. We've been working on colloidal brains up at our place. Our new miniature atomic power plant is ideal. You throw in some sensory mechanisms, some relays, feed in an analysis of a slow-motion pictorial study.
And you have a golf machine. Huh. Must have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Closer to $1 million.
$1 million? $1 million to keep me from winning $25,000? Don't you think that's unfair?
Unfair? You listen to me. Nothing is unfair that doesn't break the rules. And the only rule worth remembering is this, that the best man always wins.
You mean the best machine?
A machine is only an extension of a man, like your golf club. I don't happen to be endowed with golfing muscles and responses. You do. Those in your golf clubs let you hit a ball farther and straighter than anybody else. Saul lets me hit a ball farther and straighter than you do. It's as simple as that.
Oh, no, wait a minute. That wasn't the bet. The bet was that I couldn't make $50,000 in a year.
Maybe it was your bet. It wasn't mine. I bet that I could beat you at your own game. I don't think that you're good enough for Alice. You're not smart enough, not man enough. Should I let a few well-distributed, well-trained muscles blind her to what you really are?
And what's that?
You're a quitter. You can't stand pressure. You're no competitor. If you can't win at your own game, you can't win at anything else.
Suppose I win tomorrow.
6 strokes back? Playing against the perfect golfer?
Suppose.
Then I'd have to admit I was wrong. You have my word on that. And you could also have Alice, if she wants you.
Somewhere, Saul must have an Achilles heel. Pete, the prime fact about man is his adaptability.
Yeah, sure.
They've got to build in at least one constant, if not more. How about judgment?
I don't think so. I mean, they could tell whether he'd have wind or rain or sun or slow greens or something. They got to take care of that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Hey, maybe you could jimmy him.
Hmm?
You know, drop sugar on his gas tank or something, smash him up.
Oh, no. That isn't fair.
Saul is fair?
Well, I mean, Mr. Hatcher, he's playing fair, according to his lights. He could have had me crippled or poisoned or something, but he didn't. Well, I'll just have to beat him on our own ground on the golf course.
Oh, I don't know, Mr. Pearson. You'll have to shoot in the 50s.
Well, a golf ball takes some funny bounces.
Yeah, it sure does.
Wait a minute. There is a constant.
Hmm?
Listen, Pete, you know Saul's caddy?
Yeah. I know him. An illiterate type of guy, yeah.
Could he use $10 or maybe 20 or 50?
He's a caddy, isn't he?
All right. Pete, I want you to talk to him. You'll do better than I can.
The management of the tournament is no fool. They know which side their television rights are butted on, and they had Saul and Jim paired for the final round. Jim's drive took a tail-end hook. It dived into the rough behind a clump of trees. It wasn't a very happy start. Saul took a ball from his caddy, teed it up, and settled himself. Hey, that's some drive, Mr. Pearson.
Yeah, that was some drive. It's about 340 yards, isn't it? Some drive.
You got a tough lie there on your ball, Mr. Pearson. You going to play it safe out on the fairway?
No. You see that hole between those two trees?
Mr. Pearson, that ain't sensible golf.
Pete, sensible golf won't win.
Well, he made it. The ball went through the opening and rolled to a stop just in front of the green. Saul's easy four-iron shot was dead on the pin all the way. But it hit the back edge of the green and hopped into the rough. Jim took an easy putt for a birdie, and Saul's recovery was long, and 2 putts gave him a par.
Well, that's one of the strokes I need.
And that's the way it went. Jim's game sparkled, and Saul's game kept finding trouble. For the first 9, Jim came in with a scorching 30, while Saul came in with a 33. Kept on like that. Saul kept overshooting the green. They came into the 18th hole with Saul still two strokes up. Now, look, don't you worry, Mr. Pearson. You're going to tie him for sure.
Oh, that's no good, Pete. By tomorrow, his game will be on again perfectly.
Jim's drive sliced behind a fringe of trees. He had to shoot blind. He made it on the green, about 25 feet from the cup.
Okay, Pete. This is it. Saul's in for a five.
Don't you worry, Mr. Pearson. Don't you worry.
Okay, I won't.
He lined it up. He studied the green. He noted the slope and the lay of the grass. And then he stroked the ball. We did it, Mr. Pearson. We did it. You're the new U.S. Open champion. Well, we finally busted loose from the television and the movies and all those hangers-on, and we ducked around the back to the pro shop, where we run into Mr. Hatcher.
How did you do it?
Well, Mr. Hatcher, under extremely restricted sets of circumstances, a machine is better than a man, but over the long run, over the gamut of situations, a machine doesn't have a chance. Just can't compete.
I still don't understand. It cost $1 million. $1 million.
Here, have a souvenir.
You can take this golf ball.
No. Look at it. That's the ball Saul was using.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's another brand.
Mm.
That isn't Saul's regular ball.
That's right. It's a new one. Guaranteed to add 20 yards to the average drive.
But that's unfair.
Well, your robot was built in with one constant. It had to be a golf ball. Well, it just couldn't adapt to a better ball.
But that's not fair. Why, that's... Well.
Uh-huh.
How about...
There are no perfect golfers, Mr. Hatcher. There are only good ones and better ones. But, I've been thinking about this robot of yours, and I'll be around in a few days to talk to you at your office.
Huh? About what?
Well, I'm sure you don't want to support your son-in-law for the rest of his life. And I have $50,000 to invest in business-making robots. Useful robots. And leave golf to the men. They're better competitors. Now, if you'll excuse me, Mr. Hatcher, I've got a telephone call to make to your daughter.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features The Other Celia, a story which proves that something drastic should happen to all snoopers, but nothing as shocking and frightful as this. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Open Warfare, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by James E. Gunn and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Jack Grimes as Pete, Larry Haynes as Jim, and Wendell Holmes as Mr. Hatcher. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production. Did you know that if you are an alien, you must report your address to the government each January? The Immigration and Naturalization Service asks us to remind our non-citizens to be sure to go to the nearest post office or immigration service office to obtain an address report card, Form 1-53. In view of serious penalties for failure to comply with this law, the government has made it easy for you to meet this requirement. Pick up Form 153, fill it out according to instructions, and return it to the clerk. Do not mail it in. If you are sick or disabled, a friend or relative can obtain the card for you and return it to the clerk after you filled it out. Remember, January is the month to report your address. The World on a New Hotline. Listen for news on the hour and the exciting hotline service all day, every day on most of these stations.
Hey, I'm from Neptune. Where do I send my card?
Go to the post office. You'll see Dale's and Dave's picture there.
That's right. Finally got our picture in there somewhere. That's when Chevy Chase was still good.
Yeah, He's had his moments. He's had some decent films.
Yeah.
And he's had some things where
he's had some others.
He's had some films.
Yes. He's had some films and he's had some films. Do we get a moral with this one?
Well, we should get a moral with this one, I believe.
I'm crossing my fingers. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, you can beat a robotic golf, but you can't make him turn black and blue without spray paint. There you go.
It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Hey, I'm...
Beautiful shot. Beautiful shot.
Well, beautiful shot, yes. Well,
I guess we should turn back the hands of time.
Oh, well, that's the introduction. Okay. Caveman times were tough, long days of survival for those who inhabited the era. Most times was either spent searching for food or trying not to become food for a hungry saber-toothed tiger or cave hyenas. The reason they were called cave hyenas is because they would move into a cave and the cave landlord would be too afraid to approach the cave rent about his cave rent for fear of being eaten, so the hyena stayed.
Cave rent.
Anyway, the reason that food was so hard to search out was because cavemen had to get the low-lying fruit and berries. It was low-lying because it was all that was left by the Gigantopithecus after they ate everything they could reach. And at 10 feet tall, they could not reach the low-lying fruit and berries. The reason I explained this was to show how long it would take to harvest berries for a family of four and demonstrate how little time there would be for recreation. This is why it's so surprising that the greatest inventor of all times, Ugg the Caveman, would have time to invent the game of golf. Well, that's because golf was not originally a game, but a form of road construction. Okay, road construction is a bit of a stretch, so let's call it path construction. And the most commonly used path to collect food was Path 66. Path 66 was most popular because it would lead the cavemen to the berry bog, where the Gigantopithecus would avoid because they were afraid that 1,100 pounds they would sink into the bog and never be seen again. The problem all started when the giant sinkhole occurred on Path 66, which is weird because sinks wouldn't be invented for another 80,000 years. The sinkhole made Path 66 unpassable. Now, cavemen tried to fill the hole with dirt, but the more dirt they threw in the sinkhole, the bigger it would get. And this is where the term, you can't dig your way out of a hole, originally came from. So Ugg was called in to try and fill the sinkhole so they could continue to the berry bog. Assessing the sinkhole, Ugg determined that rocks should be used. The first rock he tried was a boulder, and it took all the cavemen in the village to move the boulder, and it did fill the hole. But so much was left sticking out that no one could get around it to continue along Path 66. So the cavemen worked to pull the boulder out of the sinkhole and push it aside the path. And the cavemen were so tired, they all went home to rest, leaving Ugg there by himself. Ugg surmised a rock could fill the sinkhole, but not big ones. So Ugg started filling the hole with small rocks. The more rocks he needed, the further he had to carry them, since he hadn't invented the wheelbarrow, which was impossible because no one had invented the wheel yet. Growing tired of carrying them, he tried to knock them with a stick and drive them into the hole. But the rocks were too heavy for the stick. At this point, Ugg tied a stone to the stick and batted the small stones into the sinkhole, which was slowly filling in. The closer he got to filling the hole, the further he had to smack the rocks. And the more people would come to watch Ugg hit the stones all the way into the sinkhole. Ugg got quite good at chipping rocks in, and when he hit the last rock to fill the hole from a distance of 5 woolly mammoths away, the entire village erupted in applause. It was with the sinkhole filled, cave people could once again travel safely to the berry bog, and Ugg's rock golf was soon forgotten. Only to be revised in the Middle Ages by two Scotsmen who had nothing better to do than to hit small balls into ferret holes in the yard with an iron stick, thus robbing Ugg the caveman of his place in history as inventor of golf.
How about that? All right. Thank you, Ugg.
Oh, my.
Yep.
There we go.
Another so you thought it was
almost
invented in Scotland,
true.
But you'd be wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. He just never gets credit for all the things that he did.
Nope.
But we'll make sure on Heary House Radio that Ugg will get the credit that he is due.
Yes. And Tiger Woods. Did he not make the cut? I think he did.
I think he made the cut, yes.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he's not leading the board or anything like that, but he made the cut, so maybe he's on the way to a comeback. Who knows?
Well, it was less than a year ago he had that car accident.
Yep.
And they almost amputated his leg.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's what
it's
you
kind of a miracle
do. You gotta...
this guy can – He was well. You know what? He's been down to Akron here several times for the when the World Series of Golf was here, and one of my volunteers, Mike Falb, who's been associated with that for about 30 years or so, and for a while, one thing he was doing was walking with the golfers. You know, he helps to keep the distance between the crowd and the golfers, and he says you don't know it, but looking at Tiger by you know, on the television, he looks like he's just a slim guy. He says,
yeah.
You don't realize until you stay next to him how built he really is. And that's probably what saved him through this. And that, yeah.
And that, too. It never hurts to just say...
I don't know. I went up to a girl and said that once, and I got slapped.
Well, it's good that we don't hear you saying
Billy,
anything
Billy,
like.
Billy, 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 Billy.
Sounds so wrong. Sounds so wrong.
Yes, it was all about dreams.
And thanks for the confidence in Ugg there, Foggs. It was
yeah.
a lot of hard, painstaking research I made up for that story.
You made up.
Okay. Yep.
Well, we got another
research that I made up.
Story that I've been waiting to. It's got a neat title, golf related, oddly enough, called the Banana Ball.
Yeah, one of the few. Series to, and they had quite a few. Matter of fact, this is episode 230. So it ran for 2 years on ABC and 5 days a week. So it doesn't take long to add up, but very interesting. I don't think they even really had a repeat during that time. And during a time when nobody else was creating really new radio drama, there were a lot of radio had shifted to shorter things, and that's where your Chicken Man was coming in and the Story Lady and things like that that stations would buy for short, you know, two-minute things. So it was very interesting during this time that ABC, who I don't think invested that much time and effort into any program they did during the golden age of radio, put it in the 1965 and 66, I believe. So... or 64 and 65. So this is very, very interesting. And all kinds of tales from comedy to drama to science fiction to horror to golf story.
Hmm. And this one is from?
From?
Way back in.
June 18th, 1965.
Say!
Theater 5 presents Mr. Mel Allen in The Banana Ball.
Everybody, this is Mel Allen speaking to you from Madison Beach, Georgia. A record crowd is here to watch the beginning of this great Southeast tournament. Oh, and there's one of the participants, the popular George Ford. Say, George, would you mind coming up to the mic? You know, friends, George set the professional world ablaze several years ago with wonderful wins at Thunderbird, Pebble Beach, and in the PGA. But right now he's trying to recover that top form, which somehow has eluded him lately. Hello, George. Would you mind saying hello to our audience and tell us about your chances?
Hello, Mel. Hello, folks. Well, all I can say is either they hang on the lip or they drop in.
George is referring, of course, to that eternal question of putting, folks. But, George, what about your long game? I know you were plagued by a hook in the recent Somerset.
Well, yes, I have been having wood trouble. The banana ball keeps me awake nights.
Meaning, folks, that George's drives have been hooking into the rough a few times too many.
On a field like this one, Mel, once is too many.
I guess you're right. Well, I certainly hope you'll recover your control, George. Good luck today.
Thanks.
And that, friends, was George Ford, another of the great professional golfers who knew the success.
Well, that was a lot of nothing, wasn't it?
Oh, I never know what to say, honey. Shaking my boots. Every time I go to my backswing, I picture that ball just swinging to the left and into trouble.
That is hardly the winning.
Oh, attitude. Agreed, agreed. And you're probably wondering what we're doing here.
Yes, the thought had crossed my mind. It would be nice at Edgemont, George. We could get a house.
Mrs. Sally Ford, prettiest member of the Edgemont PTA, married to the professional at the country club, the golfer who didn't quite make it.
Darling, when we went down the aisle, I didn't have a side bet with the preacher that you'd be better than Arnie Palmer. I married you, not 14 golf clubs.
Well, Sally, maybe I'm finally getting off a pink cloud that's become thin and wispy. If I don't cage this tournament, we'll go for the rose-covered cottage.
Yes, but you will give it the old try.
Why worry? I win, you lose.
Because you've got to go down fighting, George. You're that kind of a guy.
George Ford just hooked his tee shot into the woods on the left side of the fairway. The banana ball has caught up with Ford again, who's been playing steady, if not spectacular, golf up to this point. As George looks for his drive, we'll switch now to the 14th green and see how the current leaders, Sammy Alcott and Fred Granville, are making out.
Over here.
Hmm? What?
Your ball. I was coming through here from the 11th and saw it drop.
Now, this really fixes everything. Oh. Caddy, over here.
What do you figure on doing?
Pitch out on the fairway. Costs a stroke, but...
You could go for broke.
Hmm? What?
Well, you've got a little clearance here. If you could get some attitude with a long iron, you might blast through the trees. The growth up higher isn't too thick.
I suppose I hit a tree trunk.
You might bounce out on the fairway anyway.
Yeah, it's a thought. Say, you a club official?
You might say I come with the course. You caddies, won't you? Good luck.
Sorry, Mr. Ford, I thought the ball dropped further back.
Hmm. Maybe that man is right.
What man?
The fellow that was right here.
I didn't see anybody.
It's funny. Billy, give me a 3-iron and pray.
This is Mel Allen again, folks. Alcott and Granville now lead the field, both 4 strokes under par. Now, while they go to the 15th tee, I happen to be on the 10th fairway watching George Ford, who's in the woods preparing for a second shot. Say, wait just a minute. Seems to be some unusual drama here. It looks as if Ford isn't playing safe with the pitch out back to the fairway. He's going to go for the green through the woods. There's his shot, and it's in the clear. George Ford's just made a bold shot that's paying off. His ball has hit the green. It's rolling. The backspin is taking hold. It stops 2 feet from the pin. What a great shot. Now a tap in, a birdie three. How about that?
Now, honey, stop pacing. You can't play tomorrow's game tonight.
Oh, I'm sorry. I got the jumps, but good.
I've seen you through these before, remember?
Not in the past 2 years, no. Usually I'm out of the running by now.
Yes, but now you're only 3 strokes off. It can be done.
Maybe.
Did you find out his name?
Whose?
That strange friend of yours in the woods.
Well, why strange? He just gave me an idea, and the shot played the way he said it would.
Yes, but when did tournament officials start giving professionals advice?
Well, he didn't say he was an official. Probably an old club member. Nor is the course upside down and sideways.
That could be.
Oh, I'm getting that closed-in feeling. I think I'll take a look at the course by moonlight.
All right, George. Walk off the nerves. You've got to sleep tonight.
That's for sure. Oh, boy, what a moon.
Lovely, isn't it?
What?
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to alarm you.
Oh, no. Just didn't know you were here. Say, I owe you a big thanks.
I think not. You made the shot.
After you suggested it. That idea was important.
Well, perhaps you've got the big one now.
I'm not with you.
Well, isn't the real idea to win?
I guess so.
Well, that's a negative affirmative.
Well, I've been trying to win on the tournament trail for a long time now.
And don't you think you've got the game?
Well, when I'm going good.
Oh, that again. Forgive me if there's a thinly veiled edge of contempt in my voice, but I've heard that complaint so often. When I'm going good.
Well, sometimes the irons just don't bite on the green. The putts don't drop.
You know what Palmer's average score over the year is?
Yeah, 67, I think.
He's always going good.
What are you trying to say?
Well, I remember you when you were just coming up. You finished second at Rancho, and suddenly you were Mr. Wonderful, and not Mr. Wonder Who You Are.
Yeah, I was swinging sweet then. I just...
Just hit the ball, right?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Why don't you just do that now? You're not going to hit a drive as far as Jack Nicklaus. He's got muscles he's never even used. Play your own game.
You mean the hooking? You figure I'm pressing?
Yes, and hurrying your downswing.
Uh-huh.
And pronating your hands too much. You want to be the big slugger. Someone else, not you.
Well, look, I'm not so bad when I'm doing third in the standings here. Well,
you're relaxed because you're not sure you want to win.
Yeah, you just hit the ball square. You know, my wife and I, we've been living out of luggage for a long time. And I have an offer from a club.
Edgemont.
How did you know? Well, it's security if I stay there and teach. It's... roots, roof, normal living, and not the gypsy existence of a tournament bum.
Also, it's not the life of a champion. Very few have the chance to be a champion. Golfers don't make themselves professionals. They have to have something to start with. The coordination and reflexes, the temperament and concentration. Occasionally, they come along, the gifted ones. Some make it all the way.
And the others?
Well, they forget their responsibility.
To what?
The game. When the real pro is out there on the course, he belongs to golf. He's not a husband or a businessman. He's a pro. He's just a man and his enemy, par. Waging war on rolling fairways and smooth greens. And if the man beats par consistently and big, then he's a champion. And when the great ones are mentioned, Hagen, Jones, Nelson, Hogan, Snead, Palmer, his name is included in that illustrious roll call. And he's achieved what few men can. He's linked his name and his talents with the truly great.
You talk like a father, a teacher, an expert all bunched together. What do you want from me?
The same thing your wife wants.
My wife wants a home and family, for which I don't blame her. She wants me to lose.
Anyone can lose. She wants you to lose to a better golfer, George. Not yourself. She's a woman. Obviously, she married, or thought she married, a man.
That was kind of a shot there. I don't know, man. She thought she married a man, but she got you instead. Oh, jeez. A little rough. A little rough.
Another thing was a little rough. Here's a story, Dale, about four men went into a pro shop after playing 18 holes. And the pro asked, did you guys have a good game today? And the first guy said, yep. I had three riders today. The second old guy said, yeah, I had the most riders ever. I had five. Third guy said, I had seven riders, the same as last time. And the last old man said, I beat my old record. I had 12 riders today. After they went in the locker room, another golfer who had heard the old guys talking about their game went to the pro and said, I've been playing golf for a long time. I thought I knew all the terminology of the game, but what's a rider? And the pro said, a rider is when you hit the ball far enough, you actually have to get in the golf cart and ride to it. There you go. So
that's what it is.
I don't
old
think
man
I have too
land.
Many riders.
Yeah.
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 That's golf for the aged.
Golf for the aged and the ages, yes.
And the ages,
and,
yes.
That's the kind of story we got going on here. A guy that one time was a golfer that looked like he was going to be leading in the ranks and just kind of fell off, became a golf pro, and showed up at some events like this one here. And this one could be his last one if he doesn't win.
What is the difference between a golfer and a fisherman?
I don't know. They both lie. But go ahead.
Well, when a golfer lies, he doesn't have to bring anything home to prove it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, well, you know, you can lie and say you had a really big one that got away, you see, if you're fishing.
Yeah.
And so you still wouldn't have to take that home, just the story. Usually I get all kinds of bites when I go fishing. They're mostly mosquitoes, though.
Yep. Funniest thing, a quick funny golf story before we wrap up Theater 5. I was at this golf course, I think in Solon. I was playing with my friend Howard, and we were shooting 18 holes. And I hit one a little bit too high on the ball. I topped it, but I still got it up in the air. The thing is, it just sharply went down. It went up, but it quickly arced downward into a Canadian goose. It made this sound like... and started wobbling around like it was drunk, and I felt bad for the thing. I started to approach it, and all these other Canadian geese make this half circle between me and the wounded goose going, yeah, come on, you bring it. You bring it, big boy. Now, Canadian geese are pretty tall, Dave.
Yeah.
And when there's a whole bunch of them, it's like, okay, all right, you guys got it, that's fine. But fortunately, the goose recovered. They're pretty big. They are big birds.
They are big birds. And sometimes they're all over the place. Yeah.
Yeah, they leave lots of decorations on the golf course. Lots of decorations.
They do. Well, and in city parks and things like that. Yeah, they're not.
Oh, at this time of year, they're not very vicious. This time of year, they're vicious because they're nesting. So
like out here in the Cleveland area, out in the burbs, like near office buildings, they tend to nest like by the shrubberies of these buildings, and people coming to work are getting accosted by these angry mother geese. Chased in a pile across the parking lot. I used to work at Key Bank, and it would happen on Tiedemann all the time.
Trying to relocate, Goose. I'm not sure what was going on. There were two of them there in my parents' yard today that I hadn't seen before. And I hope they're not nesting. It makes it tough to cut the grass when they do that.
Yep. Yep.
Good time for a barbecue. Yeah.
It is.
I don't know. It's just not, you can't do that, can you, with Canadian geese? You're not allowed to do that, are you?
What, cook them?
Yeah.
I won't tell anyone.
Okay. I'm in.
I'm sure they're gamey. You would want a domestic goose for eating. And they're a very greasy bird. They're a very greasy, greasy, greasy bird. If you've ever had goose, it's very greasy critter.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of, dark meat. A lot of dark meat. That duck and goose, right?
I would imagine you could make a ton of goose gravy. I don't know. We'll discuss goose gravy after we wrap up the Banana Ball from Theater 5. Bet you we'll have time for more fun, too.
All right.
Woo-hoo. Here we go with part two. As this works. There we go.
This is Mel Allen again, folks, on the tee of the 510-yard first hole as the Southeast Tournament enters its final day. Sammy Alcott, now approaching the fifth green, is still leading the field by two strokes. On his heels, just one stroke behind, is Frank Strager, the colorful West Coast golfer. But right now, I'm here with our mobile unit to watch Cinderella man George Ford open his final day's play. Ford, winner of the PGA and other big tournaments some years back, has regained his top form. Never an overpowering hitter, he's played with deadly accuracy from tee to green. Ford trailed Strager by one stroke, Alcott by two. If the leader should falter, we could have a startling upset here at the Southeast. Right now, Ford is addressing the ball. He's going into a lazy, abbreviated backswing. There she goes, splitting the fairway with ruler-like precision. Oh, what a beauty. I'd say 260 yards and every inch of pay dirt since it's right on line with the hole. Ford is still playing like a machine, folks, and he now precedes the other players in the gallery out onto the fairway, jerking his head in that funny way I've noticed during this tournament. You know, it seems almost as if he was talking to someone.
Well, you got hold of that one, right?
Yep, and I didn't try to pickle it. Well, two strokes to pick up. Maybe I can wallop a four wood and drop it stiff.
245 yards to go. You know what to do.
Yeah, I guess so. I'll be pressing with a four. I'll stick with a spoon.
Bide your time. There's 17 holes after this. Alcott has to slip sometime, and if he doesn't, well, he deserves to win.
And Ford drops his putt for a birdie. Ford trails Alcott by one stroke. Strager has cracked, the rest of the field falling back. Yes, it looks like Alcott and Ford for all the marbles.
Now for the final nine holes.
You can do it, George. You go out there and catch that Sammy Alcott and nail him to the barn door.
A win here qualifies me automatically for the All-Star. Now how about Edgemont, Holman, and Hearthside?
Forget Edgemont. You find out right now whether you're a winner or an also-ran.
Somebody told me you'd feel that way. I don't think I believed him.
You're a serious coach. I'd like to meet him.
I'll try and arrange it if I can bring home the bacon. Cross your fingers.
The pressure's just tremendous, folks. George Ford's getting ready to tee off on the exacting 18th hole. Sammy Alcott has already completed his round and, as of right now, leads Ford by one stroke. Sammy's drive on this hole wasn't as long as it might have been, and he wisely played his second shot short of the water hazard in front of the 18th green, then pitched on in three, holed out for an even par five on this treacherous dogleg to the left. All right, Ford's ready to crank up. He's all set. There's his shot. It's a long one. Yes, sir, a long one down the left side of the fairway, but wait a minute, it's drifting over just a bit. Oh, gosh, that's a tough break. Ford's drive is tailed offline and is down the fairway, but behind the clump of trees guarding the turn in the fairway that comprises the dogleg. Ford has an almost impossible shot from there. The obvious move, I guess, would be to take an iron, get into the clear, and then try and pump a third shot across the water hazard. However, he's still a stroke behind the Masters champion, and this could be the end of the last-ditch drive that the game Ford has staged here today. Oh, he's done a dramatic job. I'm going to switch you to the clubhouse right now while I try to get down to the fairway in time to see Ford face what could be his moment of triumph or disaster.
Gee, Mr. Ford, this is a tough one.
Yeah, I hear you, Billy. I hear you. Look, take a walk for a minute. I want to think.
Sure, Mr. Ford. You'll come up with something.
Well, George, it's not too tough.
Well, hello again. You show up at all the right times. So, what do I do now?
I think you know.
Yeah, I guess. Use a six or seven iron, try for a good lie, clear of that dogleg, then pray I can hail a third shot close enough for a one putt.
All of which just ties you with Alcott.
What other shot is there?
The one you're really thinking of. The banana ball.
Oh, it's ruined me in a dozen tournaments.
And right now it can win for you, or my name isn't Harry Banks. Speed up your swing. Press for distance. Move your hands a little more to the top of the club. Maybe you can hook the ball around the dog leg with enough go on it to make the green.
Hmm. Billy?
Yes, sir?
Through it.
Lassie, Mr. Ford, off the fairway?
I think my friend is right.
What friend?
Two wood, Billy. We're going to go for broke.
So, friends, here we are on the 18th fairway. George Ford is preparing for his crucial second shot. As I came down to this position, it looked as if he was carrying on a conversation with himself. I'll say this, I'd be talking to myself right now in a spot like this. Well, anyway, Ford is all set for his shot. Wait just a minute. Just a minute. He's disregarding caution completely and taking a wood. It looks like a number two. Ford's going for the brass ring with this one shot. Ladies and gentlemen, if he can reach the green from here and putt for an eagle, he's the winner. But believe me, that's the biggest if around. Right now, he's swinging back, cutting at the ball. Wow, what a belt he gave it. It's hit fair and it's going out. And now it's bending severely over to the left. It's an abrupt hook. It's the old banana ball. It's around the bend. Say, did you hear that? That's the crowd surrounding the 18th green. Sounds like Ford reached the green with a practically impossible shot. Yes, they're signaling to me now from down the fairway. Ford has made the green in two and has a chance to win this tournament right now. And he did it. George Ford just sunk a 22-foot putt for an eagle three to win the Southeast by one stroke. How about that? The crowd is really going wild over this bold and driving finish staged by the ex-PGA winner. I'm going to try to get over to him now if I can get through the throng. Say, George, please come over just a minute. A few words for the network audience, if you please. Gee, I'm out of breath. I don't know about you. Right here, George. Gee, that was exciting.
Oh, you got no idea, Mel.
I know you're anxious to get your wife, but please give us just a couple of seconds. To what do you attribute this tremendous effort you were able to put forth to overcome Alcott's lead?
Well, I got a lot of help.
And, of course, the long hours of practice, I guess, really.
Well, actually, I wasn't too prepared for this tournament, Mel. I didn't think I could win.
You mean something inspired you?
Well, that's exactly it. A man gave me a lot of very good advice.
One of your fellow players, of course, or an old friend?
No, a complete stranger. Name of Harry Banks.
George, that's a beautiful tribute. Really, it is. This one will be treasured by the old-time members of this great golfing club.
What do you mean, Mel?
Well, Everyone here at Madison Beach remembers with pride the great golf teacher, Harry Banks, who coached so many of the members and who died 20 years ago.
Died? A tall man, a shock of white hair, scar alongside his right cheek?
Yes, that's him. And you saw his picture in the clubhouse and knew the great feeling of this club for their long-departed professional. And you, George Ford, have dedicated your great triumph to his memory. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the stuff that champions are really made of. Yes, folks, that's...
Hey, Mr. Ford, here's the missus. She's been trying to reach you. Oh, yeah, thanks.
Oh, George, you did. You really did and did. But what's the matter, darling? You look pale.
I feel that way. Honey, it seems I've been talking to a ghost.
Oh, stop kidding. Listen, I've got a confession to make. I sneaked down the fairway from the 18th green. The suspense was just too much, and I saw you bend your second shot around those trees and on.
Yeah, great.
That man you were talking to, he was standing in the trees. Is he the friend you've been speaking about?
Yeah. He was telling me that... Wait a minute. You saw him?
Tall man with white hair? Of course I did. What's the matter?
Nothing's the matter. In fact, everything is suddenly wonderful. Look, you won't believe this, honey, but an old pro came back to remind me of a lot of things I knew but wasn't really believing or doing. He was my guy, honey. He showed me the road I can follow if I want to, but that's not the really great thing. He showed me what the future can be like. But he showed me our future, honey. Because you saw him, too.
Presented The Banana Ball, starring Mr. Mel Allen, written by Frank Thomas, directed by Warren Somerville. Featured in the cast, Whitfield Connor, Leslie Woods, Court Benson, and Peter Rattray. Script editor, Jack C. Wilson. Original music by Ralph Herman. Orchestra under the direction of Glenn Osser. Executive producer for Theater 5, Mr. Lee Bowman. We invite your comments. Write to Theater 5, New York 23, New York. That's Theater 5, New York 23, New York. This is Fred Foy speaking. This has been an ABC Radio Network production.
I wonder if he was related to Eddie Foy.
No.
Okay. Just asking.
No.
That's his problem.
Mel Allen was featured in this, the great sports announcer. And he was in a baseball song as well. So he wasn't afraid to do things besides just to announce his sports. And he was just so well known and respected and loved. One of those broadcasters that could broadcast just about anything. You know, like I compare, you know, when I think of that, I think of Al Michaels and Bob Costas. They seem to be able to about do any sport.
And they're knowledgeable about them as well.
Absolutely.
You can tell when someone's winging it, you know, with sports.
Yeah, that's true. And you can tell when someone's winging it when they come up with a moral, I believe.
Yeah, you probably could. You can tell when somebody's winging it for a station, they're not ready for the moral. So there's that. we're just shattering the illusion of a flowing program, but whatever.
Right.
That's right. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar. If you're a golfer and you have self-doubt, you don't have a ghost of a chance to win unless the ghost is on your side.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
There you go.
God,
and we saw Brother Gar step in for a quick second into the chat and stepped right back out again. But
why the nerve of that guy?
I'm telling you. So we had a five rounds of golf this weekend, Dale. That's a lot for me.
That's a lot for anybody, especially from a cost perspective. My. That's a good way to eat up all your cabbage.
Yeah, and you know what? It is. It's expensive. I mean, just think to have these lawns, these giant lawns, manicured every day like they are on the golf course, and
yep.
In the summertime when it's dry and all the watering and all that stuff that goes on. So just man, it must. Dale, you saw it as a caddy. You probably saw a lot of the maintenance and stuff going on. It had to be an extremely expensive proposition to run a golf course.
It was an expensive undertaking. And a lot of manpower back then, especially. I mean, you know, you didn't have as much of these electronic yard devices. But a lot of manpower to keep the greens and the fairways looking really, really nice. Groundskeepers, they call them. Those were the guys that had the tough job, the groundskeepers.
I want to point out to Foggs, who thanked us so much for 600-plus amazing shows. But I want to thank you, Foggs. You've been here almost from the beginning. You and Gar and all the other regulars that come in, and those that we don't know that have been in, because we can see certain numbers to see how many people have listened to what we do. We thank you guys because it's just we could be here by ourselves. We'd be doing it 2 days a week for over 600 shows. If nobody was there and responding, and like you guys are there in the chat and occasionally calling, I don't think we'd still be doing it. We'd be looking at another direction to, let's face it, to gain some attention, because we like the spotlight. We like the spotlight, yes.
A little bit. I don't want too much.
A little bit.
In measured doses.
But, yes. And I'm glad that we're measuring it, especially with Foggs, because, man, he was just
he's been with us almost
from at least from the beginning when we were doing started the old-time radio. So
CW's been around since Creepy Castle days. I remember talking to her seeing her in the chat. Yeah. She goes back a ways. Yeah.
And you met Gar through Creepy Castle as well, I believe.
I think so. And a mutual liking for Misty Brew. Good old Misty Brew. I hope she's doing well. Put her whole six throws.
So with that, we've got a little bit of time left for a little bit of fun.
We do. How about spinning that wheel, Dave?
I can do that. Let me walk my way over to the wheel here and reach up to the very top and make a nice big spin of it.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
We give you now a new treatment of that most popular song, Ballerina, featuring Paul Judson. And in our version, you'll meet the famous dancer in person. The scene, an intimate cafe with candlelight and samovars. Our ballerina enters in her dazzling but delicate costume. It's a simple little frock with a gathering in the front. There's quite a crowd in the back, too. But let's listen, shall we?
Ah, Petrushka, my little ballerina. Let us drink to your beautiful hair.
Yes, Igor.
Let us drink to your gorgeous eyes.
Yes, Igor.
Let us drink to your ruby lips.
Yes, Igor.
Let us drink to your...
Yes, Igor Beaver.
Dance, ballerina, dance. And do your pirouette in rhythm with your aching heart. Dance, ballerina, dance. You mustn't once forget the dancer has to dance the part. World, ballerina, world. Just ignore the chair that's empty in the second row. This is your moment, girl. Although he's not out there reporting as you steal the show. You said his love must wait its turn. You wanted fame instead. I guess that's your concern. We live and learn.
No.
Ballerina, go on with your career. Can't afford a backward glance. Dance on and on and on. A thousand people here have come to see the show. It's round and round you go, the ballerina dance. Dance,
anything I can do for you?
Yeah. Scratch my back.
Is that all?
Now, one other thing. Let's get a little action in this joint.
Okay, stranger, if that's the way you want it. Hold it, Jeff. Hey, Sam, send out the dancing girls. I'm shouting, I'm singing. Tonight I'll do some flinging. Time to stop the show.
I'm laughing, I'm humming, because I know it's coming. Things have been too slow, and now we'll make them go.
What a night, far away ending. My baby's more than willing to make the evening thrilling.
Things are right, far away ending, and and I can tell you, you can count on me. I got the maid I'm dating waiting patiently.
I'm sprucing up to loosen up and have a spree.
I'm for her.
I figure he's for me.
Tonight'll be a beauty. Yep. What a time to be tingling. I'll soon be flying higher than a kite. Because tonight's my night to have a wingding. There'll be real fine doings tonight. Got the maid I'm dating, waiting patiently.
I'm sprucing up to loosen up and have a spree. I'm for him.
I figure she is for me. Tonight'll be a beauty.
Yip-ta-hootie, what a time.
What a time to be tingling. I'll soon be flying higher than a kite. Because tonight's my night to have a wingin'. There'll be real fine doings. We'll leave the town in ruins. Do what I do tonight.
Show's over, stranger. How'd you like it?
That's fine. Now, is there anything I can do for you?
Yeah. Scratch my back.
Can they do that on radio? Back scratching? I don't know.
On radio you can, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I guess you can. Yeah. That was Bob
yep.
Hope and Jane Russell. And before that, we had the old Spike Jones.
Good old double spin. So, Dale, what's happening on Erie House next week?
Well, one of us will know. Saturday goes. Well, who knows? No, next week, we're trapped, man. We're pinned up. We're backed into a corner with stories about being trapped. There's Haunted, Lights Out and Suspense on Friday, and then we're still trapped on Saturday. I'm trapped by myself with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, One of the Missing. Dave is on hiatus as he's going off on sabbatical into the African veldt. No. What are you doing? Kiss and tell?
It's worse. I'm going to downtown Akron. one of my cast members, Jay Bach, is a headliner at a new comedy club. They're part of the Akron Civic Theater back behind it. So I'm going to be filming it for him. So
supportive guy that you are, Dave.
And being a supportive guy, that I tried to make sure that CW will be here in my stead next week because she's a lot cuter to listen to than I am anyway.
I'll say.
Yeah. And I also left you with a great Ambrose Bierce tale from the Civil War for that. Of course, you know, most people know him for the occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. This is another great Civil War tale that he told with E.G. Marshall hosting it all. So you'll have a great time. Even without...
It will be a fine time, but we'll miss you terribly. No, I'll tell you what, folks. I bet you if you went back and listened to all 600 shows, and we'll sit here and wait. Done yet? No. If you did sit down, you will find that Dave and I have missed, between us, you could probably count on one hand how many shows we've missed combined.
Yeah. And
there's something wrong.
I mean, there's... yeah, there is.
Something seriously wrong. Right. Well, folks, being you too, have a good night. And thank you, sir, for all that you do, the cool stuff that you made and sent us, and including radios and being supportive all this time. All our listeners, good old Bob, Rob Smith, and many, many others. Too many to mention because he is out of time. We'll be back next Friday at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There.
Okay.
Sounded like a bazooki.
Yeah, one of Bob Burns' bazookas, yeah.
Bob Burns?
Bob Burns from the old radio days. They actually named the weapon after his bazooka, which he used as a musical instrument. And
there is another
the bazooka was actually named. What?
There's another famous Bob Burns, but go ahead. The bazooka was named after him?
It was after his musical instrument.
Oh, the bazooka.
Let me see
yeah.
if I can. No. The bazooka. Let me get right in here.
There's another Bob Burns that our listeners should be familiar with. I'll reveal that in a little bit while Dave's researching.
Go ahead and reveal that one. Is that that's the gorilla guy, right?
Okay, yes, it is.
So here
it
is, Bob Burns. The inventor of the bazooka. Let's see. He was an Arkansas playing in local brass bands when he invented his own humorous-looking trombone-like instrument out of plumbing supplies, which he dubbed the bazooka. Decades later, when Burns and his instrument were famous, the U.S. Army personnel were to nickname their well-known handheld anti-tank weapon, the bazooka, because of the resemblance. Burns himself served in World War I, entertaining troops. Following the war, he toured in nightclubs, carnivals, vaudeville as the Arkansas Traveler, telling folksy homespun stories and playing tunes on his bazooka. He was a regular for a while on Bing Crosby when Bing Crosby hosted the Kraft Music Hall, where he was the first host of the Kraft Music Hall. And Bob Burns was a regular on that. So
the other Bob Burns who did play the gorilla that you mentioned in the old Ghostbusters TV show is also one of the original Monster Kids. He's like a huge collector. You know, he's like a mini Forey Ackerman almost, you know. I mean, there could never be another Forey.
Okay.
But a collector of that
of
that level. A big-time Monster Kid, so yay. Did you know that golf balls are like eggs, Dave?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, they're usually white, sold by the dozen, and a week after you buy them, you got to buy some more.
Yeah. One of our sketches.
You lose them in the woods, see.
Yeah, one of our sketches, I was looking through the woods, and Dan Tiddle was as well. Dave is just, you know, give up and let's play another ball. He says, well, this is my last one, and I can't afford anymore. They're so expensive. He says, why don't you have a used one? And I told him I never had one before. Anyway, I went back to woods to look for it, and he said, well, he'll meet me up at the clubhouse. So I went back to look for it, and he looked at the camera and said, man, good thing I wore these cargo pants. I wouldn't be heading to the club by now. So he picked up all the balls and stuck it in his pocket so that we couldn't play.
He should have wore two pair of pants in case he got a hole in one.
In case he got a hole in one. Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, Dale. Put down the fourth grade joke book and step away from the table.
You know, my wife was getting upset. She says, you spend way too much time thinking about golf. Do you even remember the day we got married? I said, yeah, that's the same day I sank a 45-foot putt.
Yeah, that gets you in trouble.
Not very well received. No, I was unappreciated.
But
actually, I did some golfing on our honeymoon, and I got to play golf in Hawaii on both the islands of Maui and Molokai. I got to play golf.
You were that bad a golfer, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I started out on one island, and somehow I – no, Molokai was cool because on the golf course, Number one, I kept, when I was in the rough, I kept getting these stay out NASA signs or something like that, you know, like these government things. But the other thing was, again, in the rough, I would find a whole bunch of these geckos. There were a lot of geckos on Molokai.
Really?
These cute little lizards, they have sticky pads on their feet. Yeah.
Do they try and sell you insurance?
No, but they're extremely cute, and they make this social clicking noise at night. So in Molokai, we had a room, and they don't have a lot of – there's no flies on most of Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of annoying bugs. I mean, there's bugs because, you know, they have frogs and things that eat them, but nothing really annoying. So, like, the rooms – they have, like, gaps under the door. And the weirdest thing, we had this – the room we had on Molokai, the bathroom was outside and did not have a ceiling, which is a creepy
really?
Feeling. It's
yeah.
like you're out in the open. The toilet was
yeah,
outside.
So they had a
– I mean, it was fenced.
So they had a
privy like
out
it
there,
was open
huh?
to God and everybody, but there was no ceiling. There was – just a bamboo wall. It was like a big garden you were in. I mean, that was pleasant.
Wow, that's weird.
Weird feeling, yeah. I didn't get any. But at night, you could hear those geckos clicking and calling to each other.
Hmm.
It's cute.
Were they like
cute.
Cricket sounds or something, or what?
Not really. It was more of a click, 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 clicking sound. Cute little lizards.
Oh, okay. You know, and they good job of selling insurance too, I must say.
And the other thing about Hawaii, I don't think there's anything like poisonous, and I don't think they have
really?
Any snakes that are natural. A lot of islands do not have snakes.
Yeah, right.
Including Ireland, which of course is attributed to St. Patrick,
but they never had snakes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to kick them out when they don't have them. But I guess it's hard for them to swim. I don't know. Or for whatever reason in nature, they don't develop on island areas. Who knows? But a lot of beautiful birds and a lot of beautiful fauna and fish.
And fish, yeah.
Yeah, the water is like so, it's like bath water. It is so warm. And comfortable. And if you have like goggles or something like that, just take a bag of bread, take a bag with some bread, go swimming, and you will see the most amazing fish come right up to you. Pretty cool. I probably will never be able to afford to go again, but we did 9 days on Maui and 4 days on Molokai.
Wow. That would be a lot of people's bucket list item right there, Dale.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were things that I wish were a little different, like her mother, you know, the in-laws went with us because we actually got married on Maui, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So every morning, first thing we get up, there's this knock at the door, and her mom's like, what are we doing today? And you're like, by day three, I'm like, you're coming in to watch. It's amazing we had kids. It's amazing we had kids. I almost named the boy Jesus. But I digress. It was beautiful anyway. I swear I had more fun on Molokai because there were no in-laws. No, but it was nice, and we got to see. You know, I got to do a little, what do they do when they tow you on the skis and pull you up in the air? That's kind of fun.
Oh, parasailing?
Parasailing, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I got to dive off of a couple, not too big of cliffs, you know what I mean? Like 20 feet, nothing crazy. And
okay.
It's weird, too, as you're climbing up this rock, there's all these little crabs climbing up there with you, and you're like, yo, no, don't bite, don't bite. See a lot of crabs in the morning,
saying...
too, coming out of the sand.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. They're kind of
they
cute.
Burrow in
small.
There for the night and come out and
Something with their life cycle. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if they stay in the shallow part and they get covered by the tides or not or what, but in the morning you see them, you see these little holes and little crabs scuttling around. Cute little guys, nothing worth eating.
Yep. Heading to the crab shack.
Yes.
Yeah.
Heading to the people shack.
Yeah.
That was an amazing an experience, but like I said, I doubt we'll ever go. And I don't even want to go because I have all these pets now, and I don't have the heart to leave them. I just don't think anybody would spoil them as bad as we do, our critters.
Yeah. Well, you just have to have the son move in for a while.
Yeah, he's a good pet owner. He's got a it's part border collie and part cattle dog. Incredibly smart dog, and my son really has him well trained. That dog is just, it's amazing and extremely athletic. He can jump around and twist around and catch a frisbee, a ball, or whatever. He can snatch it right out of the air. It's a good dog.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. He was a rescue dog, I believe. And he was almost a year old, but still young enough to train him and stuff. Mine has us trained.
Well, you know, dogs want to please, and cats want to plot. That's the difference.
Yeah, cats want to be pleased.
Yeah.
In fact, there's one right now that seems to be pulling on my arm here just for a little attention.
Say, it's time, buddy. Hang up the mic and do your duty. So.
All right. Well, how can I argue with Mighty Joe Young? With that being said. And without CW,
time to bring
lead
in
the charge.
Except she's not here to. So we'll have to say, come on in, turn on the three spotlights, turn off the stage lights, and into the middle walks the one and only James Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the day, and eat a peek-a-doo. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Hey, I'm...
Man-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-